Social Service National Radio Club.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for July 2014. This is issue number 354, and I'm your host, Fred Vobey. The address for the DX Audio Service is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805. My email address for general inquiries is fvobe@realoldiesradio.com, and that's F-V-O-B-B-E. For subscription information or questions, please do sales, S-A-L-E-S, at nrcdxas.org. My telephone number for short calls is area code 419-228-6223. That number is not to be used for musings or to leave reports for the DX Audio Service. For musings and reports, please use 419-741-0205. A yearly subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S.-Canadian members is $30, and the magazine is published on CD. To subscribe or renew, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or you can log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using PayPal. If you're on the internet, you can sign up to EDXN and get your DX Audio Service in MP3 format on your computer. A subscription is only $15. Just point your browser to www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with PayPal. But subscribe only if you're able to download and navigate a website without anyone else's assistance. Before we get into the AM switch with Dave Alpert, I'd like to make an announcement and a little bit of commentary. Still no word on a convention. So I think it's safe to assume there will be no convention for 2014. It seems that more and more club conventions are becoming less of a group effort and more of a single individual effort, meaning that in the old days we used to all get together and figure out what we could do to throw a big party. Nowadays, it seems like everyone wants to sit back and wait for one person to step up and do it all. It appears that nobody wants to host a convention under those terms. In our survey taken in 2011, there were some interesting facts as related to the conventions. Now, keep in mind that these statistics are for three areas of the club: DX News, which is the printed bulletin of the National Radio Club, DX Audio Service, which is the audio side of the National Radio Club, and EDXN, which carries the content from both the printed side and the audio side. Let's go through some of these statistics and see if we can figure out what the heck is happening. 62% of the members want to attend a convention. On those not desiring to attend, 82% were DX Audio Service members, and their usual reason was either travel or finances. There are some regional get-togethers which are not classed as conventions. 85% of the members do not attend functions outside of conventions. Of those that do, the large majority of the members live in Illinois and Wisconsin. Of those who attend conventions, 51% are regular convention attendees, and 90% of those were between the age of 40 and 65. When we made this statement, "I can use public transportation to attend a convention by air, train, or bus," 18% of all members had a neutral opinion, 42% of members agreed, and 95% of DX Audio Service members agreed. As far as a flexible date for a convention, which has traditionally been Labor Day weekend, 54% agreed that any date in the fall or late summer would be good for them. We asked if you had to schedule time off in advance in order to attend a convention. 31% agreed with this statement, and 45% would like to have notices well in advance of the convention for work or for family reasons. In fact, 73% of all members desired an announcement at the convention where the next convention would be. 46% of all members have the finances to attend a convention. In fact, 77% said finances were not a factor, as long as the room costs and the convention registration were not incredibly high. Now, judging from the comments, a registration fee of $45 to $50 and a room rate of less than $95 a night was just about right for an individual. They would pay more if there were perks such as a free dinner on Friday night and free breakfasts. In fact, 63% said they would pay more for a furnished lunch on Saturday. 68% said they'd pay a little bit more for a Friday night dinner. An interesting statistic was that 30% of the members would bring a family member or a non-member friend if there was a special rate for them. Why do people come to conventions? A third of the members come for fraternity. 71% like to go on station and other tours. 76% of members would like seminars and speakers on the topics of radio. And half like fun things such as the radio candy quiz. 38% of all members want a schedule of events and something to do each and every day, while 57% of DX Audio Service members want something planned each and every day. Roughly half of the members didn't think a big, expensive commercial hotel was necessary. They just want it to be accommodating, clean, have a hospitality room, and better than four-star dinner on Saturday night at the banquet. By the way, 34% would prefer a hotel or motel with a restaurant on premises or next door. 63% of all members want a formal banquet on Saturday night. 71% of members want a guest speaker at the banquet. Some interesting statistics from long-time members. 66% of members tell us that conventions are not as good as they were. However, this survey was in 2011, and yet today I still hear how good the Minneapolis 2013 convention was. 44% of members didn't mind having a convention with another radio club, such as the International Radio Club of America or the Worldwide TV FM DX Club. Of those disagreeing, 91% were age 80 or older. I think these statistics are pretty interesting, albeit they are over 3 years old now. The numbers do point out an interest in conventions. However, it seems that there's an apathy toward keeping this long-standing tradition. As I said, there is no convention for 2014, which is the first since 1948, when Ray Edge's wife was ill. By the way, the 1943 convention was held at Ray B. Edge's home at 325 Shirley Avenue in Buffalo, New York. There was a low attendance due to wartime travel restrictions. The first four National Radio Club conventions from 1934 to 1937 were held in late June at the home of Robert R. Weaver at 603 West Market Street in York, Pennsylvania. It wasn't until 1955 in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, did the club grow to a point where the convention went from someone's home to a hotel. Robert Gorsuch was the host of the convention, and there were 41 members attending the convention in 1955. If the DX Audio Service members are interested, I'd be glad to read a summary of where conventions have been held over the years and who held them. You can leave your comments, or your vote, I guess you'd call it, on the musings line. I'd like to hear your thoughts on what you feel about the convention. Do you think that the time has come to just end all conventions? Or should we have a regional convention, or perhaps just a appreciation dinner for those people who have helped out with the magazine? Give us your thoughts by calling the Musings line.
This is the AM Switch. Hi, everyone. Dave Alpert with the July AM Switch. This issue, we have one edition, AM Switch Volume 81, Issue 27. Starting out with call changes. The construction permit for the move of the 640 station in Terre Haute, Indiana, to Piatone, Illinois, has been assigned the calls WWAM. 810 WXFO Royston, Georgia, changes to WYZI. 870 WINU Shelbyville, Illinois, changed to WSVZ on May 9th. The station is presently silent, pending a move. If Shelbyville sounds familiar, they were supposed to have changed to WTLY, but this was set aside. 1230 WYGJ in Terre Haute, Indiana. This CP for a new station takes the call WIBQ by flipping the call letters in the market. It is reported on the air. 1260 KWNX Elgin, Texas changes to KLGO. 1300 WIBQ Terre Haute, Indiana is now WYGJ. 1410 KSMA Lompoc, California changes to KTNK. 1490 KLGO Austin, Texas is now KTAE. New station watch. New station CPs built, moving toward licensing. One to report, 1550 KDCO, Golden, Colorado, has been heard on the air and has been granted program test authority. That was effective March 21st. New station CPs expired and deleted. The CP for 1420 in Roe, New Mexico, for a new station, U1, 2500 watts day, 103 watts night, expired and is now deleted. Same for the CP on 1450 in Craig, Colorado, which would have been U1, 250 watts, day and night. It's now expired and deleted. Applications for new station construction permits dismissed. The new station on 1200 in South Ogden, Utah, requested U7, 25,000 watts day, 10,000 watts critical hours, 250 watts night. And the new station on 1270 in Petersburg, Alaska, was supposed to be U1, 1,000 watts day and night. Both of those have been dismissed. On this issue, we start a new category called Mysteries at the FCC. Is there a possible new station in Union Gap, Washington on 1060? A CP for U2, 16,000 watts day, 1,500 watts night on 1060, mysteriously appeared in the FCC database. Records elsewhere on the FCC website suggest this is not right, but we'll keep our eyes open and see if some new information turns up. The 1210 CP in Osceola, Indiana, was originally set to expire, but has now been extended to August 20th, 2014. And the CP for KDPP on 890 in Olivehurst, California, U4, 10 kilowatts day, 480 watts night, was scheduled to expire on June 7th. We'll have to check back next month and see if it made it or not. In Auction 84 news, in May, the FCC auctioned off the rights to apply for 22 construction permits where two or more mutually exclusive applications were received in 2004 and where the FCC had not found a preference for any of the applicants. 10 auctions resulted in winners. 12 others ultimately didn't receive any bids. 850, the application for Enola, Pennsylvania, won the right to a construction permit for a new station with U4, 2,500 watts day, 2,000 watts night. 1080, WHOO, Kissimmee, Florida, won the right to a CP with U7, 27,000 watts day, 4,000 critical hours power, 2,000 watts at night, and a move to Winter Park, Florida. 1130, the application for Ravenna, Nebraska, won the CP for a new station with U7, 12,000 watts day, 3,000 critical hours, 600 watts night. Up in Alaska, the application for 1200 in Chugiak won the right to a CP with U1, 50,000 watts day and 30,000 watts night. 1300 WRCR, Spring Valley, New York, won the right to move to Ramapo, New York on 1700 with U1, 10 kilowatts day, 1 kilowatt night. Ramapo is 80 miles west of Spring Valley, and both are about 35 miles due north of New York City. 1450, the application for Montoursville, Pennsylvania one with U1, 1,000 watts day and night. 1470 Coalinga, California one with U4, 250 watts day and night. 1490 Bozeman, Montana one the CP for U1, 1,000 watts day and night. 1500 the application for Culver City, California one with U4, 25 kilowatts day, 1,000 watts night. And the application for 1540 in Enterprise, Nevada will be for U4, 30,000 watts day and 400 watts night. Winning bidders had until June 4th to make down payments, June 18th to make final payments, and they have until July 21st to finalize their CP applications. Stations going dark. We have one. It's 1300 WYGJ, Terre Haute, Indiana. The station turned in its license on May 9th, and the WIBQ calls and format are now on 1230, as we noted. Let's turn to construction permits for existing stations now. CP's on the air. 1380 WFNW in Naugatuck, Connecticut had a CP for U4, 3,500 watts day and 350 watts night. It's now on. CP's built, nearing final licensing. 550 WAYR, Orange Park, Florida, applies for a license to cover their CP for U4, 5 kilowatts day, 65 watts night, with the city of license changing to Fleming Island, Florida, but no change in actual transmitter location. 660 WORL, Altamont Springs, Florida, has been granted program test authority for a CP on U4, 3,500 watts day and 1,000 watts at night. 810 WJJQ, Tomahawk, Wisconsin, applies for a license to cover CP for U1, 940 watts day, 12 watts at night. 920 KIHM, Reno, Nevada, applies for a license to cover their CP for U2, 4,800 watts day, 850 watts night from a new site. 940 WCPC, Houston, Mississippi, granted program test authority for their CP for U4, 31 kilowatts day and only 7 watts at night. By the way, that 7 watts goes east-southeast in a cardioid pattern. 970 WWRK, Florence, South Carolina, applies for their license to cover the CP for building out U1, 10 kilowatts day, 31 watts at night. And 1060 KBFL, Springfield, Missouri, applies for license to cover their construction permit for U1, 470 watts day and 19 at night from a new site west-northwest of the city. Amendments to previously granted CPs. 960 WFIR, Roanoke, Virginia, has a CP for U2, 10,000 watts day and 4,400 watts night from a new site, and they were just granted an amendment to 10,000 watts day and 5,000 watts night, moving to the new site for day operations only and keeping existing night site and parameters. 1220 WSRQ, Sarasota, Florida, has a CP for U4, 1 kilowatt day, 39 watts at night from a new site, but they were just granted an amendment to that CP for U4, 1,000 watts day, and only 4 watts night from yet another new site. New construction permits granted. 720 KFIR, Sweet Home, Oregon, granted a CP for U1, 10,000 watts day and 146 watts night from a new site. 840 KXNT, North Las Vegas, Nevada, granted a CP for U4, 50,000 watts day, 1,000 watts at night from a new site. 990 WISK, Lawrenceville, Georgia, is granted a CP for D1, 2,500 watts from their existing site. And 1510 WJKN, Jackson, Michigan, is granted a CP for D1, 380 watts from a new site. Amendment to outstanding CP, 810 WRSO, Orla Vista, Florida, has a construction permit for U4, 20,000 watts day and 1,000 watts night, but has been granted an amendment to U4, keeping day power the same, but dropping night power to 400 watts. Amendments to pending CP applications. 690 WQNO, New Orleans, Louisiana, had applied for U1, 9,100 watts day and 106 watts night, but they amend the application by adding another tower to make it directional. U2, 9100 watts day and 2100 watts night. 1460 WRAD, Radford, Virginia, is licensed for U2, 5 kilowatts day, 500 watts night, and had applied for U1, 4500 watts day and 37 watts night, but now corrects that application to U1, 5,000 watts day and 3,700 watts night, which makes a bit more sense considering all the other stations they have to protect. Applications for new construction permits. 630 KIDD Monterey, California, applies to adjust pattern and towers remaining U4, 1 kilowatt day and night. 1380 WNLA Indianola, Mississippi, applies for U1, 1 kilowatt day, 15 watts night on 1390. 1390 WTNL Reidsville, Georgia, applies for U1, 275 watts day and 35 watts night. And 1700 KKLF Richardson, Texas, applies to consolidate operations at their existing night site while remaining U1, 10 kilowatts day, 1 kilowatt night. Special Temporary Authority. 840 WHAS Louisville, Kentucky, granted an STA to use auxiliary tower during repairs to their main tower. 910 WLTP Marietta, Ohio, is granted an STA with U4, 500 watts day and 9 watts night, all from the licensed day site. 910 WJCW Johnson City, Tennessee, granted an STA with night pattern at variance. 920 KDHL Faribault, Minnesota, granted an STA with reduced power pattern at variance for reasons unknown. 930 KSDN Aberdeen, South Dakota, is granted an STA with U1, 1,250 watts day, 250 watts night after lightning damage. 950 WWJ Detroit, Michigan, is granted an STA to run 89% power due to isocoupler arcing. An isocoupler is the device that bridges the gap between the tower and STL dish and the receiver inside the building, which keeps the AMRF from getting back where it's not supposed to be. 1010 KXEN St. Louis, Missouri, granted an STA with U5, 50 kilowatts day, 125 watts night from an alternative night site. It seems they lost the lease for their present nighttime site. 1050 WMSG, Oakland, Maryland, granted STA with U1, 800 watts day, 75 watts night due to ongoing transmitter issues. 1060 KFOY, Sparks, Nevada, granted an STA with U4, 1,000 watts day and 250 watts night for possible QRM to the airport navigation tower at Reno Tahoe Airport. 1150 KDEF, Albuquerque, New Mexico, granted an STA with D3, 1,250 watts from a temporary site. 1210 WANB, Waynesburg, Pennsylvania, granted an STA with D1, 100 watts due to ongoing transmitter issues. 1240 KRAL, Rollins, Wyoming, applies for an STA for U1, 50 watts, day and night, using a temporary long wire antenna. KRAL needed to broadcast before June 8th in order to maintain their license. 1250 KKDZ, Seattle, Washington, granted an STA with 1,500 watts day, 1,250 watts night at their licensed day site because they lost their night transmitter site back on May 25th. 1300 WOAD, Jackson, Mississippi, granted an STA with U1, 5,000 watts day, 950 watts night. 1310 KEIN, Great Falls, Montana, granted an STA with U1, 1,000 watts day and night from an alternate site. 1360 KBUY, Ruidoso, New Mexico, granted an STA with reduced day power, and they're now running U1, 201 watts, day and night. And 1520 KOKC, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, granted an STA with U2, 20,000 watts, day and night, due to transmitter and tower issues. Now it's time for our trip to the morgue. Here are silent stations, stations informing the FCC. They're now silent. 870 WINU, Shelbyville, Illinois. Silent as of May 9th as the new owners move the offices and studios. 1300 WSSG, Goldsboro, North Carolina, is silent as of April 15th. The new owners of WSSG want to repair and upgrade the facilities. 1330 WJSS, Havre de Grace, Maryland, silent since May 21st after losing their transmitter site. 1340 WCMI, Ashland, Kentucky, is silent as their tower in South Point, Ohio, was taken down by storms on June 12th. 1390 WAJD, Gainesville, Georgia, silent as of May 15th with weather-related technical problems at their tower and transmitter site. 1400 WJWF, Columbus, Mississippi, silent again on May 16th. This time they cite transmitter failure. And 1410 WZBR, Dedham, Massachusetts, silent as of May 13th due to antenna problems. The station management says they can't run more than 25 watts into the antenna and told the FCC in its filing that the station is both silent and operating at low power. FCC put them on the silent list, but it's unclear which one is actually the case. If they're operating at 25 watts, that would be an STA for parameters at variance. And now into the radio ICU we go to see these stations brought back from the dead. These are formerly silent stations informing the FCC they are no longer silent. 960 WQLA, La Follette, Tennessee, was silent since June 25th, 2013, but back on the air as of May 25th. 1110 KTTP, Pineville, Louisiana, silent since September 12th, 2013, was back May 10th. 1160 WWQT, Tryon, North Carolina, has been silent since September 13th, 2013. WWQT came back on the air May 17th. 1320 KNCB, Vivian, Louisiana, was silent since May 5th, but it was just a short time and they were back on May 12th. 1360 WHJC, Matwan, West Virginia, had been silent since January 17th, but was back on the air May 2nd. And 1450 WPAM, Pottsville, Pennsylvania, has been removed from the FCC silent station list, but we have no data on their off and on dates. Checking the FCC cash register. FCC fines. We have only one to report this month. WIFI 1460 in Florence, New Jersey, was fined $6,000 for running day power at night. In June of 2012, the FCC appears to just be getting around to that now. Canadian news from the CRTC via Sean Axelrod and Dan Siss. 960 CKNT, Mississauga, Ontario. This CP for new station not yet on the air applies to amend the CP to 700 watts day and 104 watts night from a different transmitter site. It appears at the present time they'll be non-directional, according to Fred Vobey. 1150 CBAC in Toktoyaktit, Nunavut. I have no idea whether I said that right. But they will be signing off. CBAC, which is LPRT, applies to move to 99.9 FM. This would be a great catch if you could log them, if you could say them. 1280 CJSL, Estevan, Saskatchewan, granted a CP for U3, 10 kilowatts day, 1,000 watts night on the frequency of 1150 from a new site. The existing 1280 site is atop a coal deposit that Sask Power wants to mine. And the new station on 1610 in Montreal, Quebec, is granted a CP for U1, 1 kilowatt day and night with an ethnic format rumored to be a South Asian dialect. Well, thanks to Sean Axelrod, Bill Hale, Tony Fitzherbert, Wayne Heinen, Fred Vobey, and you, the membership, for your tips and information. You can always tell us what's going on by sending your info via the Musings line or dropping Fred an email. Till next month, this is Dave Alpert in sunny SoCal, wishing you a great summer and encouraging you to get out and listen to your radio. 73, and good listening. Now, here's Mark Durenberger.
No, it's not Laurel and Hardy or the Three Stooges, but it is about that time again for our summer break we call the Bandscan's Midsummer Madness. We're hanging out at our cabin hideout in north central Minnesota. Let me get my feet up on the deck here. Railing here. And we're secure in the knowledge that we do have internet access that can be turned off when we don't want to be connected. This place is also perfect for deploying our DCAS double delta antenna. And as loyal followers know, we've had some really great success with this thing, given how poor summer usually is for DXing. So what else is there to do up here? Except for some, boating and fishing, and we may even get around to that if we can get our feet off the deck. Meanwhile, we get to share some time with you that's not about DXing, but it is about radio. This edition of our Midsummer Madness is almost all musical in content. We're currently in Stearns County, Minnesota. It's a bastion of German traditionalism and customs and practice. On the local radio station, KASM 1150, you hear old-time music, and that includes polkas. But this old-time music is authentic, and not like the synthetic polkas that seem to pop up everywhere. This one, for example, a poor example of a polka, was performed back in the 70s to commemorate the rise of ABC's Ted Koppel and Nightline and ABC's World News Tonight. We'll mercifully cut this short, but you might get a kick out of it.
Politics and foreign wars, all the weather, all the scores, that's the World News Polka. Business news from Tokyo, stuff you saw on Koppel's Joe, that's the World News Polka. It's late at night, you're wide awake, and you're not wearing pants, so grab your World News Now mug and everybody dance. Have some fun, be a pal, every anchor guy and gal, that's the World News Polka. The World News Polka. Gee, thanks, Mr. Jennings.
Too bad they couldn't carry a tune, but maybe that was all part of it. Over at the BBC, they were known for a superb sound effects and radio production team. Most of those wizards are retired now, but they made their mark a half century ago, notably behind the fabulous Goon Show, which spawned, among others, John Cleese of Monty Python fame. The Goon Show and other fast-paced BBC comedy productions just wouldn't have worked without the wizards of the razor blade and the variable speed tape recorders. But the scheduled work they did was usually on a weekly basis, and they thus had free time to fool around. These type A personalities couldn't be tied down, so that free time spent in the editing suites turned out some funny bits. Here is an example, with apologies to composer Giacomo Rossini.
Thank you.
In the early post-war years, the American forces' radio operations in Europe were turning out highly formatted and organized on-air productions fed to the American forces' network Europe. That network consisted at the time of a number of super-powered AM stations that pretty much covered most, if not all, of Europe, supplemented by a low-power FM network in France and low-powered repeaters in Italy. They reached the many thousands of Allied occupying troops and their families, as well as Europeans who wanted to tune in to learn about America. This clip from the American Forces Network, also called AFN Europe, is an interview with the director of Radio RIAS in Berlin. Ever hear of it? Berlin at this time, early 50s, was a nexus of Cold War maneuvering, and the divided city was a magnet for propaganda broadcasting. Several radio groups addressed this mission, including the BBC, the American Forces Network stations themselves, the official German radio Deutschlandsender, and Radio RIAS. RIAS was different. Hear for yourself.
Thursday, 15 January, 1953. This is Operation Information. You're about to hear the inside story on radio in American Sector, Berlin.
Our Operation Information microphone is situated in Berlin, where we are getting a glimpse of RIAS, the American-sponsored German-language broadcasting station here. That was the RIAS identification tone, the sound that tells all RIAS listeners, both in East and West Germany, that they are tuned to the channel that assures them of accurate information and good programming 24 hours a day. In order to find out more about this fine production at RIAS, we have with us Mr. Tom Brown, musical and production director of RIAS. How large is this station?
We have two medium wave transmitters, one of them 100,000 watts, the other one 40,000. We have a 20,000 watt shortwave transmitter, which is frequently heard in Australia, and we have a 3,000 watt FM transmitter. The station itself has about 600 German employees on payroll, another 250 on personal contract, and has constant dealings with freelance artists here in Berlin. The American staff consists of seven.
What is the exact purpose of RIAS in this city behind the Iron Curtain?
Well, its purpose derives from the very fact that it is behind the Iron Curtain. The United States government maintains this station as a means of keeping in touch with the people in the Soviet zone who have been cut off from all contact with the free world. And RIAS's main purpose here is to inform them of the truth that is going on and from which they are kept.
From the response that you have received from your broadcast, do you believe that this purpose is being accomplished?
Well, we know very well that our message is getting through. One of the best ways we know it is the fact that the communists in the East Zone, Soviet Zone, are our deadly enemies. The present press campaign against RIAS in the Soviet communist-controlled press over there has reached tidal wave proportions. And just recently, they've taken to actually jamming us on both of our medium wavelengths.
Now, one of the things I'm interested in is a bit on the technical side, namely what you call Drahtfunk or wired wireless.
Yes, that is something that I don't think most Americans are familiar with. It goes back into the beginning history of RIAS, when it was called DIAS, Drahtfunk, in the American sector. When we first started operation, we didn't even have a transmitter. What we did have, though, was equipment that was able to put a signal onto the telephone wire, which could be taken off in private homes by a connection between the telephone apparatus and the radio. That is what is known as Drahtfunk, or wired wireless.
That sounds somewhat like the system for wired television in the United States, although I understand that this method doesn't interfere with telephone calls. By the way, how long each day does RIAS stay on the air?
We're on the air around the clock. We have actually a 1.5 hour pause in the mid-morning because we need that time for necessary technical repairs, but in general, we can be heard almost any time of the day.
Just how many studios does Rias have at its disposal?
We have 8 studios in operation in the building, but because of the large musical groups that we have, we also maintain 2 studios outside headquarters. In addition to that, we also have a number of mobile units, trucks we equipped for broadcast and reception, and these travel throughout the city picking up special features and local stories and so on.
Do the German people have a liking for popular American music?
They certainly have. One of our most popular programs is something that comes every Monday evening at 8 and is called Hit Parade. That is probably our most popular show. It's a jazz dance music program, and it has a really enthusiastic following among the younger set.
I hate to break in right here, but if I'm not wrong, a Rias station break is scheduled in a few seconds. Could we catch that on a recording to let our listeners know just what an identification is like on Rias?
Okay, here it is.
Hier ist Rias Berlin. Guten Tag, verehrte Hörer. Wir bringen Ihnen jetzt unseren Schulfunk.
Now, you'll notice that that was a pretty brief affair for a station break. That has a purpose. Rias listening is a dangerous activity to people in the Soviet zone. It's not advisable to make too big a thing yourself of the fact that you are Rias, and we try to use the word Rias as little as possible.
Could you give us a brief idea just before we leave here what Rias programming is like throughout the day?
Well, I said earlier that our main purpose here was to keep the people in the Soviet zone informed of what's going on in the world about them. We try to include this informative material in an all-around program of a general entertaining nature, and we try to offer as much of general interest to the public as we can. Of course, we have a great deal of music, light music, dance music, also a good deal of serious music. We have many sport features. We have special programs for women, for children, for businessmen, for farmers, and so on.
And the result of this production, fine listening for the German people in and around Berlin.
We'll be back right after this word.
AC Spark Plug, builder of more parts for more cars than anyone else in the world, presents the How Can You Show with Lyle Beauvais's helpful money-saving solutions to everyday problems. Mr. Beauvais.
And listeners, try to keep your How Can You questions short, okay? Hello?
Mr. Beauvais, I have this problem.
That wasn't short enough. Hello?
How could you get rid of the shine on a blue serge suit?
Sponge shiny spots with water, then stroke gently with fine steel wool. Hello?
How can you shine your shoes without shoe polish?
Use a banana peel. Rub the inside of the peel over the shoe, wipe clean, and buff. Hello?
I say, if I use a banana peel to shine my shoes, won't monkeys follow me around?
You can effectively terminate dumb phone calls by slamming down the receiver.
Rexall Superclinamine are the vitamins selected for use by the U.S. Olympic team.
I'd like you to meet your minimum daily requirements.
Hello. How do you do?
I see you.
Hello. This is George Fenneman for Superphenomen. Plenamin.
Superphenomens always win. It's the vitamin for good sports.
The leading Czechoslovakian gymnast is now making his third attempt to balance his diet.
Super duper super plenamin. Sure miss plenty if you don't have none.
Hello, this is George Plenamin for Super Phenomens. Plenamins. Hello.
Rexall Super Plenamins contain 11 vitamins and 8 minerals plus a liver concentrate, and they've been selected for use by the U.S. Olympic team. Do you understand that?
Yes.
What did I say?
I don't know what you said, but I understand it.
Hello. This is George Fenneman for Super Plenamin.
Hey, he made it. Oh, no.
Are you old enough to remember when we dialed the telephone with a rotary dial and we had telephone numbers that began with the name of the exchange? Stan Freberg examined the revolution that led to touch-tone dialing, and he did this back in 1961.
The 19th century fairly crackled with the brilliant inventions of Thomas Edison, Samuel Morse, and Alexander Graham Bell. Tonight, we welcome the 20th century inventor who has tried to streamline Mr. Bell's invention. The inventor of all-digit dialing, Mr. Ned Numeral.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Take a couple steps to your left there, Mr. Numeral.
All right.
Okay. Unch a little bit further.
To about where that big X is on the floor?
That's right.
Very well.
Okay, let her go, boys.
What do I do?
No! So much for digit dialing. And now, excuse me just a moment. Come in.
Mr. Freeberg?
Yes?
I'm from the telephone company.
My check is in the mail.
I was referring to what you did to Mr. Numeral. I didn't find that too amusing.
Oh?
It might interest you to know that all digit numbers are easier.
Really?
People are tired of trying to remember things like Murray Hill 5 or Trinity 6. Too hard. We simplified it for them. We gave them area code 212-473-29768, for example.
Yeah, a world of difference, sir. I didn't notice you consulting us about it, though, putting it up to a vote.
So. We put it up to the machine.
The what?
The computer. Here, I have a picture of it in my wallet. See here? It's called Univac.
Oh, yes.
Here's another shot of it taken with our two smaller machines. That was taken last summer.
You have a nice family. The oldest computer there.
Univac?
Yes, it has a familiar look to it.
Really? Well, it's standing right over here.
Where?
Mr. Newman was planning on giving you a digit demonstration before you were so rude to him.
Do you foresee an all-digit society with numbers for people instead of names, Mr. I didn't catch your name.
Emerson, I.B. Emerson. That's the sum and total of it, yes? All-digit dialing is just the beginning, and you wait. It's going to get a tremendous reception.
And I think I hear it coming now. He's all yours, folks.
No, 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 please help. Put me down. Just wait till you're pressing in an extension phone.
Looks like they've got his number, all right. All right, people, let's open our Manhattan telephone directory hymnals to page 212.
What area code?
All right, cut that out now. Here we go.
They took away our Murray Hills. They took away our Sycamores. They took away Trafalgar and State. They took away our Plaza, our Yukon, our Michigan.
And left us with 4732-9768. Remember Susquehanna.
With a high 370 and a merry 54422.
Who said it's cumbersome? See the nice number. Some Univac machine's gone and picked out for you.
They took away our Lexingtons. They took away our Delawares. They came and got Tuxedo and State. They swiped Eldorado and Judson and Trinity.
And left us with 4732-9768. Blessings on the telephone company.
With a hi-ho, 370.
Goodbye, dear old prefix. Hello, 736.
Oh, there a million laughs down at AT&T.
And finally, we can't leave you this summer without some sort of salute to AM radio.
Just a sound that's sweet and true.
bubblegum in your ear. Truth and some humanities, what I wanna hear. Give it that AM radio, all of the songs we used to know. They'll give you everything you need. Your satisfaction's guaranteed. I've been exact.
We regret the signal is not of broadcast quality.
All right, Max Sennett, bring in the closing. And that's our 2014 midsummer break. We hope you heard something of interest. Next month, it's back to work doing our bandscan thingy to acquaint y'all with AM signals captured from around this great continent. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. We'll see you in August. Until then, good listening, DXers.
You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service.
79-year-old disc jockey's radio station keeps retirement community plugged in. This story was written by Tim Skilhern on June the 9th, 2014, from CBS Channel 4 in Denver, Colorado. Dick Gustafson is spinning the oldies to keep him young. The 79-year-old resident of the Holly Creek Retirement Community in Centennial is also a disc jockey, playing live radio shows and tunes from the 30s, 40s, and 50s from his studios of Holly Creek Radio. The idea behind the station, he says, is to capture the nostalgia and the feeling generated by the music of his generation, but he also provides a service. His station informs fellow residents about upcoming events and activities by playing the station's program audio over the community television station. It's a way of helping out, he says. Gustafson says HCRK, short for Holly Creek Radio, primarily plays music from four genres and has a solid rotation: religious and gospel on Sunday mornings, classical on Sunday afternoons, big bands on Saturday mornings, country and western on Saturday afternoons, and some Broadway show tunes on Monday. The rest of the week, he mixes it up. Twice a day, he plays old radio shows at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. The average age here is 82, he says, so that gives you an idea of what kind of music they're going to like. We stay away from the current stuff because most of them don't like it anyway. In other words, no rap, no heavy metal, no rock and roll. That's not our thing, he says. Besides, I can't stand it, and I wouldn't put it on in the first place. HCRK's catalog boasts 3,000 to 5,000 songs, many contributed from residents' own collections, which Gustafson borrows and burns to his station's computer for later play. They bring in their music, and then we play it, he says. He occasionally weaves in some tunes from his own collection of 1,000 albums that he's gathered over the years. His favorite is big band music, a taste acquired during World War II. HCRK debuted on August 12, 2013, after Gustafson and his wife toured the retirement home. His wife mentioned he had had more than 6 years of radio experience under his belt, so a worker at Holly Creek suggested they start a radio station. Gustafson gave some equipment, an anonymous donor added some more, and a radio station was born. Gustafson's show is a way for some residents to reconnect with memories. He recalls a woman who told him once, during a show, that it felt like the 40s all over again. She was dancing in the halls, he said. Others told him that if the television didn't play his station, they wouldn't even switch it on. Right now, Gustafson works about 40 hours a week at HCRK alongside five volunteers. It's been a full-time job, he says. I hate retirement, to be honest with you. When I first started this thing, I thought it was going to be a hobby. When I found out how much benefit it had for others, it turned out to be more than I anticipated. In addition to his radio chops, Gustafson has worked in finance and dabbled in acting, politics, and sculpting. But at Holly Creek Radio, it's his passion. It's fun, he says. When you do something that's fun and helps other people, it makes it worthwhile. And that's what it's all about. This has been 79-year-old disc jockey's radio station keeps a retirement community plugged in. The story was written by Tim Skilhern on June 9th of 2014 and came from CBS Channel 4 in Denver.
A couple pirates are busted by the FCC. This story comes from press releases from the Federal Communications Commission. Martinus Charles is no stranger to the FCC. Mr. Charles has a history of operating an unlicensed FM radio station on the frequency 95.9 megahertz in Pompano Beach, Florida. Mr. Charles received a written warning from the FCC, which stated that operation of an unlicensed FM radio station violated the act, must cease immediately, and could subject the operator to significant forfeitures. Local law enforcement subsequently seized the radio equipment used by Mr. Charles to operate the unlicensed FM station on 95.9 megahertz pursuant to Florida law and shut down the station. But this didn't stop Mr. Charles. On June 18 and 27, 2013, agents from the FCC's Miami office located a transmission on the frequency of 92.5 megahertz and were able to directional find it to a multifamily residence in Pompano Beach, Florida. The agents traced a coaxial cable from the antenna into apartment one of the residence. Each day, the agents took field strength measurements of the station's signal and determined that it exceeded the limits for operation under Part 15, therefore required a license. On June 18, 2013, agents from the Miami office spoke to Mr. Charles at the residence. Mr. Charles told the agents that he did not live in apartment number 1, but that someone named Henry Michael lived there and operated the unlicensed radio station. Mr. Charles agreed to sign for a written warning addressed to Henry Michael, which stated that operation of an unlicensed FM radio station violates the act, must cease immediately, and could subject the operator to significant forfeitures. Further investigation determined that Mr. Charles's driver's license and vehicle registration list apartment number 1 of the multifamily residence as his address. The owner of the multifamily residence also stated that the owner of Mr. Charles's vehicle, whom he knew as Henry McHale, and who matched Mr. Charles's physical description, leased apartment number 1. Accordingly, applying the forfeiture policy statement, section 1.80 of the rules, and the statutory factors to the instant case, the FCC conclude that Mr. Charles is apparently liable for a forfeiture in the amount of $20,000. Meanwhile, over in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, another pirate was taken down. The FCC imposed a penalty of $25,000 against Damian Anthony Ojukwu Allen for operating a pirate radio station in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The commission warned Mr. Allen several times that pirate operations are illegal and previously imposed a penalty on him for operating a pirate radio station in Pompano Beach, Florida. The fact that Mr. Allen would commit the same violation on the same frequency of 101.1 megahertz demonstrates a deliberate disregard for the commission's authority and its rules, warranting a significant $25,000 penalty. Both pirates will have to pay up or seek terms of monthly payments to pay off their fines. Meanwhile, the FCC will be keeping an eye on them to make sure they stay off the air. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Chris Gay in Lexington, Kentucky.
We'll be back with more of the DX Audio Service for July 2014 after this station break.
WTUP.